Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Megan Kamrick. Municipal elections took place around much of New Mexico this week. The two incumbent mayors in some of the state's biggest cities, Albuquerque and Santa Fe, handily fought off challengers, although each of them faces a second term with a new city council. Also, the $50 million bond question in Albuquerque for a stadium for the New Mexico United soccer team failed, although the contentious nature of the project may have helped spur record turnout in Bernalillo County for a municipal election. Other bonds, however, did win the favor of voters. Two cities, Las Cruces and Santa Fe, both used ranked choice voting with mixed results. And in Albuquerque, the Albuquerque Public Schools Board saw a major shift with three business-backed candidates winning seats. We'll dive into all of this today on Let's Talk New Mexico with a roundtable of reporters, but we also want to hear from you. What issues were on your mind when you went to vote? Did you feel conflicted over some of your choices? Tell us about it at 505-277-5866. You can also email us at letstalk@kunm.org, and we're on Twitter. Use the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Joining me now by phone is Julia Goldberg. She's senior correspondent with the Santa Fe Reporter. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning, Megan. Thanks for having me.
It's interesting that Mayor Alan Weber handily won a second term, because when I read your paper's coverage, a lot of folks voting for him didn't seem very enthusiastic about it. What were the issues that helped him win?
I think the issues that helped him win were some of the voters I spoke with on election day felt that he had handled the pandemic fairly well, and that that had been important to them. But mostly they indicated they just hadn't heard compelling arguments from the other candidates, particularly from his closest competitor, City Councilor Joanne Vigil-Coppler, that made them feel she would have done any better. It was sort of a good enough kind of vote.
Mm-hmm. And that said, an ally of Weber's in the city council race, Roman Tiger Abeda, did not retain his seat. Seems like it was a big upset. Another incumbent won. And you have a newcomer, Amanda Chavez. What drove these results? What were some of the issues coming up for folks around city council races?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right to characterize Abeda's loss as an upset. I certainly didn't see that coming. I live in his district, in District 3. That was a close election. He lost by 100 votes. That loss seems to have been somewhat driven by a lack of turnout. Councilor Abeda represents District 3, which is the south side of Santa Fe, notoriously tends to be lower turnout. It certainly was in this case. And Joanne Vigil-Coppler's support is within those districts, and Abeda certainly endorsed Alan Weber, so that might have worked against him a little bit with some of her voters in that district, is a little bit what it looks like, at least at this sitting. And in District 4, I mean, Chavez came in, she really whooped her closest competitor, Rebecca Romero, but Romero ran into some pretty high-profile problems in the course of the election. It turned out she had some undisclosed felonies in her past, so voters just didn't seem to really entertain that at all. And then Siglindel in District 1, that was one of two races in which ranked choice voting theoretically could have happened. She had three competitors, but again, she took over 65, maybe 66% of the vote, and there was no need for any ranked choice. They really didn't make a dent in her support, so she's coming back for a third term, and she is another close ally of Alan Weber's, but again, from a very different part of town. So I think you really saw that kind of division that characterized the race between sort of the downtown area and the south side area play out in those council races, if not in the mayor's election.
Will it make any difference in terms of what Weber can accomplish in his second term?
It's hard to say, because I think there's really mixed views on what he accomplished in his first term. And I think what will play, you know, an even bigger role is the conditions under which he is governing. Hopefully we won't have as robust sort of pandemic conditions. Some of the biggest issues in the race, at least for people who were voting against him, were how he handled the destruction of the obelisk on the plaza last year and some of these cultural divisions. So some of the ways in which he has sought to address that are underway, a kind of big committee that nobody wants me to go into, I'm sure. It's called SHART. That stands for something. but at any rate, some of that's already underway, and hopefully there won't be a repeat of some of those larger divisive issues that were occurring last year and in the sort of height of cultural tensions and pandemic conditions.
Also joining me here in the studio at KUNM is Austin Fisher with Source New Mexico, and he reports in Santa Fe and in Albuquerque. Hello, Austin.
Good morning, Megan. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. And I understand there were some very long lines in Santa Fe at some polling places. Did that ever become an issue for folks getting to vote?
I think that it ended up being okay because I think the election workers were doing a good job of handling it. I went to vote on election day in District 1 and saw that there was a polling place that was closed. So I went over to the Montezuma Lodge and I overheard a poll worker saying that the Gonzales school had a power outage briefly, and so there was this crush of voters at the lodge, and it was pretty crowded in there, and there wasn't really real social distancing going on, but it went smoothly overall, and I think they did a good job of sort of herding us into lines and making sure that everything went okay.
And what did people tell you about why they were out voting, either in Santa Fe or in Albuquerque?
I think that I came across, a mixture of people that day. One voter felt like politicians need to be more positive about oil and gas. This voter was voting, what he said, conservative across the ballot. Another voter was out supporting Councillor Lindell and Alan Weber and just wanted to show support for them and was really looking for more candidates in Santa Fe to talk about affordable housing and how the city and the state might try to address the housing crisis in New Mexico. So I think it was definitely an interesting mix of voters that day.
And in the Albuquerque mayoral race, the incumbent Tim Keller also won pretty handily with about 56% of the vote. These are uncertified yet. And Sheriff Manny Gonzalez got 26%. Eddie Aragon got about 18%. Was there anything surprising in those numbers that it was such a blowout?
I think it is surprising because the campaign really focused on crime. And I think that sort of the conventional wisdom would be that Manny Gonzalez would have some sort of credibility advantage over Tim Keller, but that apparently didn't really play out at the ballot box. What I found interesting about the race was that all three candidates, I mean, any politician is going to try to highlight differences between themselves and their opponents, but I saw that all three of these candidates, despite historic protests in 2020 that were calling for the defunding of the Albuquerque Police Department, all three of these candidates campaigned on more police funding and specifically more police officers on the street.
It's interesting because we are going through a crime spike in Albuquerque and also seeing more people who are unhoused. So crime played out. Did any of these other issues rise to prominence?
Well, you saw housing become central to the debate around the stadium bond. Mm-hmm. I think that there were multiple groups in the city of Albuquerque that pulled the conversation toward gentrification and housing and used that as their basis to argue against the bond.
And also joining us is Jessica Dyer with the Albuquerque Journal. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Megan.
The Albuquerque races also saw record turnout. You talked to pollster Brian Sanderoff about that. What was driving the turnout this year? Was it because the state had consolidated local elections? That means people who may not be likely to come out for just the school board race or just for bonds had all of this on their plate.
Right. I think that the thinking is the consolidation, you bring out people for school board races and CNM seats and those sorts of things, brings out maybe more people for the city race. Although I know that the reporters we sent out on Tuesday who talked to voters all over the metro were saying that, the primary things they wanted to talk about are the mayor's race, the city mayor's race, and the stadium. But also, I think the stadium bond was a huge issue that brought more people out that may have sat on the sidelines in a normal local election. So I know that drove, we believe it drove some of the turnout. And there's also just more registered voters now.
Mm-hmm. We'll definitely dive into the stadium bond. We had an email from Deborah Tefo. She said, for literally the first time since I have been eligible to vote, I sat out this election. None of the three mayoral candidates, especially the incumbent, had sufficient gravitas and appeal. I only regret not taking the opportunity to vote on the two bond issues. And my producer, Kaveh, and I were just saying, actually, we're not sure if Deborah's in Albuquerque or Santa Fe. That might be able to apply to either city from what I'm hearing from you folks. Also, affordable housing is an issue in both cities right now. Did any of the candidates make that more of a central issue to their campaign? Anyone?
I know that Tim Keller did talk a lot about what the city has done to invest. But interestingly, the city puts affordable housing bonds out every 2 years. And this was, I believe, the lowest one in, I don't know, five or six
cycles. The lowest amount of
money. It used to be a standard $10 million, and it has steadily gone down. Hmm. So it was a $3.3 million bond this year for affordable housing.
Yes, Julia.
Yeah, I think housing was a significant issue in the Santa Fe race. I moderated the mayoral forum that was solely devoted to housing. And I think I know that one of the voters I interviewed on Tuesday, she had been very struck by comments that Joanne Vigil-Coppler had made at some point during the campaign, in which she was distinguishing the rental housing from homeownership as sort of real, what she was characterizing as real housing. And she backpedaled those comments, but it had stuck with this particular voter significantly, and it was sort of a vote against her. And certainly Mayor Weber made a lot of points about affordable housing on the campaign trail.
Interesting. And Jessica, you wrote in one of your stories this week that despite the city's challenges, campaign-related drama may ultimately define the 2021 mayoral race. Remind us what some of the drama was.
Oh, my goodness. I think everyone maybe doesn't, but certainly a high-profile event back in June was the Doncopter interrupting a Sheriff Gonzalez.
Something some of us never thought we'd have to write or say on air.
A lot of discussions in the newsroom about how to handle that. But that sort of, you know, seemed shocking, but then the race just kept getting crazy. The campaign finance or the public financing fight that Sheriff Gonzalez had, he was initially denied the public financing by the city clerk and fought that for 2 months. The issues were related to some ethics complaints that the Keller campaign had filed against him, notably that there was forged paperwork that he submitted in order to qualify. That fight was about 2 months long. Mm. It didn't end, I guess, until about early September. And he finally decided after losing in court that he would turn to private financing. So that went on for a while. There were ethics complaints against both the other candidates. Eddie Aragon is facing one and hasn't been adjudicated yet regarding his use of his own radio station. Keller has been accused of using city personnel and resources for campaign purposes. That one also hasn't been fully adjudicated before the ethics board, but it's been a long and interesting campaign season.
Yeah, I can imagine. Did any of those sort of play out in Santa Fe, things like that, Julia?
There was a bit of drama in Santa Fe. When I showed up to moderate the mayoral forum, the first thing I was told was that I needed to keep the hecklers under control, and I said, okay. It played a little bit of a part in one of the ethical complaints that Weber's campaign filed. But in a nutshell, there's sort of an anonymous person in Santa Fe going by the name of Jay Baker, who has been posting a lot on social media. And I think there were T-shirts made sort of along the lines of anonymous, you know, everyone is Jay Baker attacking the mayor. And the mayor's complaint sort of spoke to this idea that there were sort of MAGA forces at work against him in the race. And so that was sort of the degree of our drama here. I think we don't have to get into it now, but I think it sort of spoke to the way in which national politics were kind of reflecting in the local race in a way that I can't recall in years past. Mm.
Interesting. Stick with us as we recap New Mexico's elections this week. What were the issues that drove you to the polls this election? Let us know, 277-5866, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick. We'll be back in a moment.
Support provided by Jen Wilson, home team of RE/MAX Select. As a realtor for 26 years, Jen believes homeownership can help create independence and wealth for women's futures. Information for prospective home buyers and sellers at nmhouse.com.
Support provided by The Paper, Albuquerque's weekly alternative newspaper, focused on local news, investigative journalism, culture, food, and the arts. Details on how to subscribe to the newsletter at abq.news.
Diwali is the Hindu festival of lights, celebrated across India and the Indian diaspora. Families light lamps and candles, and fireworks help celebrate in the streets. And the light always overtakes the darkness. Coming up, music inspired by the Festival of Lights on the next performance today from 8 p.m.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're taking your calls about the elections that took place Tuesday. What were the issues you were looking for candidates to address this year? And were you disappointed or pleased? If you were in Santa Fe or Las Cruces with ranked choice voting, how did you use it? Give us a call at 205-277-5866. Let us know or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. You can also tweet using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. And Jessica Dyer with the Journal, the Albuquerque Journal, I just wanted to follow up for a minute. Mayor Keller will start his new term with a rather different city council. There will be likely two runoffs in December. It looks like Republicans could cut into the majority Democrats hold in the chamber. Republican Dan Lewis is likely retaking the seat he once held for District 5 from Cynthia Borrego. He also ran for mayor against Keller 4 years ago, so perhaps he's still interested in that office. Also, another woman of color, Lonsena, likely lost her seat, a former police officer, Luis Sanchez, in District 1. And among the six folks running for the District 7 seat, the two leading candidates both emphasized crime. So it feels like there's a shift happening on city council. What will this mean for Keller's second term?
You know, it'll be interesting because I think he's had a pretty good time recently getting things through. I mean, I think the notable exception was the cannabis zoning that he attempted to put through. The council pretty much roundly rejected that, but he's had a pretty friendly council for the last few years. So I don't know. I think Lewis will kind of make things interesting. I mean, there's not a lot of love lost there, I don't think, between the two of them. And he's certainly more conservative than Cynthia Borrego, who he defeated. So I don't know. The two remaining seats, the District 7, which is sort of the middle of Albuquerque, and District 9, which is sort of the Southeast Heights, are still open. Basically, we don't know who's going to be in those. So I think there a lot will ride on those two races.
Is this sort of a start of a conservative backlash after big progressive wins in recent years?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think with Councillor Senna, it's worth noting that she was an appointed counselor. So she never won election to that seat. And she succeeded Ken Sanchez, who had been there. I think he was elected four terms before he passed away. And he was a conservative Democrat. So he was, I think maybe this is, you know, Luis Sanchez is a Democrat, also a more conservative Democrat. But I think this is sort of maybe a return to what that district has long been. So I'm not sure. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Also joining us today is Michael McDevitt. He is the government watchdog and enterprise reporter with the Las Cruces Sun News. Thanks for being here, Michael.
Thanks for having me, Megan. Good morning.
Good morning. You will have a very interesting new city council in Las Cruces after this election. All progressive women in a part of the state that honestly many of us think is more conservative. Why did this happen?
Yeah, generally southern New Mexico is more conservative, but Doniana County is typically more liberal. But I think what's also noteworthy in the election results for our city council is that the an incumbent was reelected, the only incumbent on the ballot, Yvonne Flores, in District 6 in Las Cruces. She's a progressive woman who's now serving, will be serving her second term come January. And then the other two women elected are replacing outgoing progressive councilors. So to me, I think this showed that despite concerns that were mentioned during this election cycle about crime and homelessness and economic development in the wake of the pandemic and recovering or recovery for local businesses, voters seemed to endorse the direction the city is going with the election of these progressive candidates to keep the city council a progressive body in going forward. Now, they will still be joined by Mayor Ken Miyagashima, who sits on the board as a as an at-large member. But this is an historic first for the city.
So I was struck by the fact that your races, as you told me, were also dominated by issues around crime and policing. But those did not seem to help conservative challengers. Why?
No, and I think that there's a couple of reasons. I think that, first of all, we've had an issue in Las Cruces where, because of the pandemic, the police department has said that they have this month-long backlog of crime statistics that they have trouble updating the public on. So when we get our crime statistics, we're often getting them months after the fact. So it's tough to actually get an up-to-date picture of crime in the city. That being said, our police chief has said that while violent crime spiked at the beginning of 2021, the first couple of months, it's been on a downward trend for the last couple of, for the rest of the calendar year so far. So we'll have to see if that holds up when we actually get crime stats. But I think we've had these high profile incidents, but I just don't think that for whatever reason that wasn't seen at the ballot box, or if those crime concerns were heard by voters and public safety was a concern, it's possible that the voters just endorsed the progressives as having a better solution to that perceived issue than the conservative candidates.
Las Cruces also has ranked choice voting. Tell us, how does that work and how did it play out in this race?
Yeah, so this was the second election cycle that we used ranked choice voting. We notably first used it in 2019 in our mayoral election, which had 10 candidates. And then it was used in a couple city council races in that year as well. This year it was used in really, really one, technically two, but really one race. So the District 3 race had a write-in candidate as a third candidate. So it was technically ranked choice, although voters had to obviously physically write that candidate's name in. That race did not go to a second round of tabulation. The candidate who was elected in District 3, a woman named Becky Graham, she actually won with 52% of the vote when the first round of ballots were tallied. Then there was a race for our District 5 seat, which has been represented by a progressive named Gil Sorg for the last 12 years, I guess. So he chose not to seek re-election and instead ran successfully for the Doñana Soil and Water Conservation Board this cycle. So there was a four-way race to replace him, and a woman named Becky Coran used to be the chair of the New Mexico State University Faculty Senate. She ended up winning after three rounds of ballot tabulation in this ranked choice race. And there was a conservative candidate in that race named Ronnie Cisneros, who was definitely more traditional Republican, told me when I interviewed him first that he had walked away from the Democratic Party back in 2016 and had been concerned with what he called the socialist progressive agenda of the city council, referring to kind of failed resolutions that were, non-binding, that suggested that the state legislature pursue gun control, or this resolution that was passed back in 2017 that declared the city a welcoming city for immigrants. He didn't like those sorts of issues, and he wanted to retake the city is kind of how he put it. And it just doesn't seem voters responded to that. He actually finished in third behind marketing professional and this guy who's very involved in community service here in Las Cruces named Robert Paquette, who ran kind of this unlikely campaign where he had conservative issues on his platform, where he was not against, he was against vaccine mandates, was okay with masks for COVID, talked about how he wanted to ease the burden on small businesses and get rid of taxes, also talked about how this recent police officer hiring shortage that we've had in the city of Las Cruces could be an opportunity to actually add more unarmed social workers to the police department. And so he had this kind of...
It's an interesting hybrid.
Interesting platform. And to me, this District 5 race really shows for proponents of ranked choice voting what the advantage is that you have a more diverse field of candidates with more non-traditional viewpoints running.
I just wanted to ask our listeners, if you voted in a ranked choice system, did you pick a runner-up or just one person? Let us know at 505-277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. I wanted to jump back to Julia Goldberg with the Santa Fe Reporter. Santa Fe also has ranked choice voting, but it appears a lot of voters were not inclined to use it this time. Why was that?
You know, it's very interesting, Megan. I've covered ranked choice voting on and off since the 90s, ridiculously enough. And Santa Fe voters keep telling pollsters, because there's a lot of data being amassed at this point, that they really like it and they want to see it more and they want to see it statewide. And then whenever I am at the polls, I can never find anyone who feels that way. So I'm not sure what that's about. This was the third time that we used it. It really came into play in the 2018 mayoral race. Mayor Alan Weber did not have over 50% in that first round. He did not actually best his competitors until the fourth round. The second and third place votes he received played a really big role. This time, neither of the races, there were only two races in which there were enough candidates to have it. Neither ended up needing it. And what voters said to me, even the ones that were going to rank, were sort of like, yeah, why not? And the ones that were not going to rank were very clear that they did not want to give the other candidates a chance by ranking them, which indicates to me a little bit what I heard from advocates, which is more education needs to happen so that people kind of understand what they're doing when they rank choice vote. And, you know, what some of the folks from like Common Cause and Fair Vote said to me is that it's kind of not enough to try to explain this to people right before the election, but that there needs to be a little bit more of a year-round understanding of this voting system so that people have a better sense of what it is affording them. On both sides, actually, because we didn't have very many candidates in this year's race, and in theory, ranked choice voting sort of opens up the field a little bit more. Now, whether or not that was because people didn't understand ranked choice voting or because pandemic and everything else, they didn't want to run for office is hard to say.
You wanted to say something, Michael?
Yeah, I think going off of what Julia was just saying is that in Las Cruces, similarly, there was a lot of misinformation about ranked choice voting that was spread throughout this election cycle from the conservative candidates in the race. There was notably two candidates who issued a joint press release back over the summer that claimed that ranked choice voting was corrupt and somehow fraudulent, and that... they actually misstated how it worked. They said that it allowed for spoiler candidates and that people would siphon off votes, which is actually the opposite of what ranked choice voting does. Similarly, there was another woman who was running for District 3 on the Las Cruces City Council named Bev Courtney, who claimed to me in multiple interviews that ranked choice voting, just a number of different misinformations about ranked choice voting. And I saw there's this kind of anti-COVID procedure group down here called Free People of the Southwest that organizes rallies against the state's COVID mandates and things like that. And they actually put out a press release or a newsletter to their members ahead of the election that mentioned that in the four-person District 5 race that I had just talked about, that they should only rank two candidates. Just the two more conservative candidates, and that they should not rank any of the other two, which to me, you know, I would argue that if you're doing that, you're actually disenfranchising yourself, because if it comes down to those two, even if you're a more conservative voter, I mean, you want to be participating in that election. And I think that, you know, voters could be going to these trusted sources, whether they be candidates and, you know, organizations that they belong to in town. And if they're hearing this information about ranked choice voting, then I think that the county clerk's office probably has a responsibility to educate voters about that. And that's something that I heard from one poll official that I actually spoke with on Tuesday. He believed that the county clerk's office should have done more education this year around ranked choice voting. There was a really heavy campaign in 2019 ahead of the first instance of ranked choice voting to really tell voters what this was all about. And he was this, you know, one of these poll workers who's held a prominent position this election. He was saying that he just didn't see that this cycle and was disappointed. And he actually mentioned that at the polling station that he was working at, that the number one cause of spoiled ballots was ranked choice voting. People filling out their ballots incorrectly, having to redo them, and just not being super sure about the whole process.
You were nodding at that, Austin.
when I was voting, I saw two voters make a mistake on their rank, and they had to spoil their ballot. So yeah, it was the same way in Santa Fe.
Interesting. We have a caller, Bill from Los Lunas. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, New Mexico. Good morning, Megan. I'm pretty happy with how the election went statewide, except for the council in Albuquerque. That's a depressing situation. I'm also happy with the national level, how the election went. We lost one out of three. We won two out of three. Any place, that's a win. And the Republicans and the conservative Democrats are calling it a loss. Two out of three is a win, no matter how you see it.
All right, Bill, thanks for calling in this morning. We'd love to hear about the issues that drove you to the polls this election. Let us know at 505-277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. Actually, Austin, I don't know if you can answer this. My producer was asking, there's an active socialist party in Albuquerque. Are they getting any traction as a political party? I don't know if you guys, they're giving me wide eyes. Like, we don't know. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I would say there is, you know, this local branch of the Party for Socialism and Liberation. They're involved in some of the opposition to the stadium bond. But in terms of electoral work, I'm not even sure if that's on their plate.
Austin, also on voting, our reporter here at KUNM, Nash Jones, did some terrific stories on drop boxes in New Mexico. You can find those linked at the link on KUNM.org with the show. You expanded on those. Each county is supposed to have at least two by state law there, but that minimum goes up depending on the population. These are supposed to be available 24/7, bolted to the ground, monitored. Now, five counties got exception, but 10 did not. Some are not providing any. Why was this so important, especially in Native communities?
So this story matters a lot for, you know, indigenous people in New Mexico and in rural parts of the state, because while it may not seem like it to a lot of people, the pandemic is still going on. People are still dying every day from COVID-19. So being able to participate in elections while minimizing the risk of contracting COVID-19 is an extremely important public policy issue. You know, I spoke with Austin Wiaki from an organization that tries to get out the vote in Native communities. And he was telling me a story about how in 2020, in one part of Navajo Nation, there was some misinformation going around in the community, and this led to sort of a crush of COVID-positive voters waiting until Election Day to vote. And they all came to the same polling place. They were lined up outside, nowhere to sit, no, you know, out in the cold, you know, coughing in the cold. And these groups were getting panicked calls from their canvassers saying, we don't know what's going on at this poll, but there's a bunch of sick people here. And that really just drives home the importance of offering as many alternatives to a traditional poll as possible, as part of a broader strategy. So, you know, I called around to a few of these county clerks where there are none of these ballot boxes, despite this rule that's in place. They did have alternatives. I mean, absentee ballots were still an option. They were still allowing people to drop off ballots inside a county clerk's office, but with plexiglass. I mean, there might be some debate over the effectiveness of the plexiglass, given that it's a respiratory virus. But it's so important because Native communities in New Mexico, what I'm being told is that every elections cycle is a chance for Native people to lose their representation in the state legislature or in a local government. And Native voters are extremely sensitive to having an advocate for their rights and for their interests in state and local government. And so every election cycle is a chance for them to lose that type of representation and a chance for actually to even lose polling places. During the pandemic, we saw multiple sovereign nations, right, close their borders in order to protect their communities from the virus. And under state law, you couldn't have a polling place on a reservation while also having your borders closed. Hmm. There was a temporary legislative fix in one of the special sessions that fixed this problem for the 2020 race, but that remains a threat to voting rights for Indigenous people.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, back in a minute.
Pope Francis is reaching out to Canadian Indigenous people. He is meeting with a delegation of Indigenous nations and planning a visit to Canada. We'll discuss how his gestures will be received following the grief and anger over unmarked graves found on former Catholic residential schools. On the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Did you know KUNM accepts unwanted vehicles, like that car you've had parked in your driveway and don't need anymore? Maybe it's time to let it go. If you're ready, give us a call today. We'll have it picked up for free, handle all the paperwork, and you'll get a tax deduction. It's easy, and it really helps support KUNM. Get started by calling 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm talking about the elections that took place this past Tuesday with reporters Austin Fisher of Source New Mexico, Julia Goldberg with Santa Fe reporter Michael McDevitt of the Las Cruces Sun News, and Jessica Dyer with the Albuquerque Journal. Did the fact that we had consolidated local elections with a lot of issues make you more inclined to vote? What took you to the polls? What did you encounter when you got to the polls? Did you vote absentee? There's still time to call this morning at 505-277-5866. You can also email us at letstalk@kunm.org. Jessica, do we know how many absentee voters there were this year in Bernalillo?
I think I do know that. As of what they gave me yesterday, there were 17,699.
Out of like 122,000?
Well, the countywide total was 135,000.
Oh, okay.
So it was about 4% of the total was absentee.
Was that down or up from last time? Do we know?
I don't know that. I'm not sure.
Okay. Also, I should say that there were assurances from the Secretary of State this year you would be able to register and vote on election day, and actually that did not happen this election. So I don't know if any of you out in listener land were counting on that. You can let us know at 505-277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. And I want to get to the proposed bond question on building the New Mexico United Stadium. It was perhaps the most visible issue for the Albuquerque elections. The team was the only donor to a pro-stadium political action committee. They spent about $871,000 in the campaign. That was primarily on TV commercials, mailers. And the team itself is very popular, but the stadium was soundly defeated. So I wanted to get your thoughts on why. What do you think, Jessica?
You know, I think I was surprised, actually, the way it was already, there was already criticism right out of the gates. I mean, they released this study. The next day, the mayor says, we're going to try to put a $50 million bond on the ballot. And I think it was the next city council meeting I covered. I was just shocked at the onslaught of opposition that came in from kind of groups I didn't expect. And I mean, it was people, obviously, you know, bond issues maybe struggle a little bit more with conservative voters. But it was a lot of people coming in from the left who were opposed to this, saying, this is not what we need. We have so many other pressing concerns. We have a growing unhoused population. We have just so many other issues that we should be spending money on. So I was a little surprised given their popularity. And it just sort of, you know, I think it got worse and worse for them. I mean, even the polling, I think, nothing indicated that it was going to pass.
What do you think, Austin?
Well, I, you know, this issue is so important because I think a really wise person once said that budgets are moral documents. I think that this, if you look at the sort of the priorities that are set, if you look at all of the bond questions that appeared on the ballot in Albuquerque, and you look at how much money goes into various different parts of the city government, I think that those policy decisions actually reflect our priorities, say, as a state, as a local community, as a society more broadly. I think that, honestly, these types of votes are not popular elsewhere in the country. There's been a long history of public financing of sports stadiums in the United States. And most of these referendums actually get voted down. In some other cities, some local governments have actually tried to get around the referendum process because they know that it's unpopular. So I think that this bond question sort of sparked a broader debate about, you know, what is important to Burkeños? Like, what is important to us as a state? I mean, is it a stadium or is it affordable housing? And I think some people would take issue with an either-or framing. But I think that it really did, I think it did contribute to turnout because it was a real opportunity for voters throughout the city, but especially in the historic neighborhoods, to express themselves on issues that sort of go deeper than just a candidate.
What's interesting, though, is that I think all the other bonds passed, right?
Easily.
Uh-huh. Did they pass? You had bonds in Santa Fe and Las Cruces, right, Julia and Michael?
Yeah. We had renewals of a general obligation bond and renewal of a mill levy, and they both passed significantly, I think 79% and 73% respectively on each of them. So,
did you have bonds in Las Cruces, Michael?
Yeah, the school boards or the schools had them, and I actually talked to a lot of voters who had mentioned that those were like one of the main reasons for coming out to the poll.
That's interesting. I would love to hear more from that. If some of you want to call in, 505-277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. Was it the stadium bond that brought you out? Was it the other bonds that brought you to the polls? We have a caller, Kathy from Rio Rancho. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning.
What did you want to ask about or say?
Well, I'm really confused. I didn't know. The only information I got through email and through basically through email was the information from Albuquerque. I didn't get anything at all that we were going to vote for anything at all. I called, the only way that I was informed was that, you know, that you'll get these commercials, well, why don't you go out and vote? And I said, are we voting for something in Rio Rancho? And I found out, I called the voting area, and they told me that they were voting for some, they gave me, they said, yeah, we're voting, you guys are voting for the school board, somebody from the school board of Rio Rancho. We're voting for CNM and some other people that I never knew about it. The only reason I went is that I thought it was important for me to vote. And I voted for anybody who was a female. I did that. And I didn't know the rest of the people at all. I didn't know who they were, or, you know, most of them are people that have been there in their post before. There were some, nobody, they said that some, you have to get around 50%, I think is the law. And some of them didn't get 50%. And I said, how can they get 50%? There were only like 140. The lady told me I was 126. I asked the neighbor just before I left, did you know about it? And she said, no, it's not important. And we don't have polls in the area. We have to go very far. Over 10 miles just to get voting, because the places that were like the city hall that we used to vote no longer were accepted to vote there in Rio Rancho. We're like, I feel like I'm in the desert somewhere where there's no information at all. I come from California where you get pamphlets left and right, whether or not we're going to vote or not, with information about anything that it goes on. But not here. I don't know how much, who pays for those pamphlets at all. I wish I could find out.
Well, that I appreciate that, Kathy. Also, you can also try the League of Women Voters. But this brings up an interesting issue, because I think, tell me if I'm wrong, guys, I don't think Rio Rancho participated in the consolidated elections this time around. Right, Austin? So
yeah,
what is that? Does that, that could, seems like that could make a difference in voter turnout?
Yeah, I think it would be... that would be the case. They opted out of consolidating, you know, their local offices with, or their, I believe, their mayor and council races with their other local elections. I think a number of municipalities throughout the state opted out of doing that. And I think that it kind of does show that, like, if you have these different races all together, you're going to get more participation. I think that, you know, there could have been a lot more discussion about those Rio Rancho school board races, and hopefully I think Source New Mexico is going to be interested in some of those going forward as well.
Like many municipalities, we also had a school board race here and in Las Cruces. What happened in Doña Ana County, Michael McDevitt, with those?
Yeah, well, those school bonds to renewals passed. But I was also going to ask if you'd be interested in hearing about the Las Cruces School Board elections, which were the other kind of hotly debated election this
cycle. Yeah, this is becoming increasingly true around the country, right?
So. I think even more so than the city council races this year. Those are ones that I saw more signs for and just heard more about. But in those races, despite... some contentious public meetings that we've had over the last year at the LCPS board over masks and the idea that critical race theory was going to be taught in these schools, which is not true. There was, like, the conservative candidates that ran, none of them won. And not all of them ran specifically on those sort of divisive, more culture war issues. But they definitely were things that were mentioned, and they were definitely in the minds of voters. There was a couple of voters that I spoke with that mentioned that either they were voting to keep the right-wing candidates off the board, or that they were voting to protect their kids from critical race theory.
Did you say critical race theory?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which there was an equity policy that was passed by the school board a couple months ago, and it was called critical race theory. It's not critical race theory, but it was an avenue for these parents and other conservatives in town to go and speak to the school board about that issue. And what ended up happening is that you had three educators elected to the board, more liberal candidates. Two of them retained their seats. Ray Jaramillo, who's the president of the school board, he retained his seat. And he actually told one of our newspapers in town that he was accepting no contributions this year and doing no campaigning. And it's something that when I heard that, I thought that he might be in trouble, but he ended up winning. Pam Court was a French teacher for a couple decades, and she retained her seat. She was appointed this summer following the resignation of another school board member, and so she was elected. And then there's a man that's going to serve on the school board named Bob Wofford, who was an English teacher for several decades in Las Cruces, and he will be the first openly LGBTQ member of the board when he takes office.
Austin, we saw a rather different outcome here in the Albuquerque school board races.
Right. I think the Albuquerque school board, you know, according to my colleague, Sean Griswold, it actually saw four new members joining the board from campaigns that raised and spent thousands of dollars in races where candidates traditionally spend much less. And three of those candidates could push that school board in a direction led by GOP influence. I think something that Sean found was what really defined that race was funding. That the candidates who had enough funding were the ones that were successful. Danielle Marie Gonzalez won the District 3 seat that feeds into Albuquerque High and Valley High schools with 41% of the vote. She raised almost $42,000, nearly twice as much as her three opponents combined. So I think, you know, you could see more of these sort of national debates at school boards coming in to New Mexico. We haven't seen a lot of that yet, but I think it's definitely something that I think we and everybody should be watching really closely.
I was struck, Jessica, that you attended NAIOP. For those who don't know, I used to be a real estate reporter. NAIOP is a very powerful organization here of commercial real estate developers and other affiliated groups. And you heard them say at a meeting, like, we're getting involved in the school board.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually watching. I was there because Sheriff Gonzalez was speaking to the group. And at the end, I think it was one of their board members got up and said, hey, you know, I know there's a lot of frustration about the way things are going. And we are, you know, there's a chance to sort of remake the local school board. If you're frustrated with the way things have gone this past year, know that we're getting involved. And I know that they had a political action committee involved in helping to fund some of these candidates. And I think the three that they were backing all won. So.
And we have about 30 seconds left, but Julia, this brings up, there's supposed to be nonpartisan elections. These are sounding pretty partisan.
Well, it was interesting to me, Megan, because, you know, the Democratic Party sent out a news release following the election citing Weber's win, Keller's win, the Gary Tripp's win in that Rio Rancho school board race, the Las Cruces council races that Michael referenced as wins for the Democratic Party. And we're seeing a lot of national discourse about these local races serving kind of as bellwethers for the Democrats heading into, you know,
2022. That is all the time we have today. Thanks, everyone who called in to share your thoughts. And thanks so much to our guest, Austin Fisher with Source New Mexico, Julia Goldberg with the Santa Fe Reporter, Michael McDevitt with Las Cruces Sun News, Jessica Dyer with the Albuquerque Journal. Let's keep the conversation going. Share your thoughts on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM. On Facebook, search for KUNM Radio or email letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcast. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez handled the phones. Robert Maldonado was live tweeting. Kaveh Movahed produced the show. We won't have a show next week, but I encourage you to tune in for a special rebroadcast of Peace Talks Radio to honor the anniversary of our loss of our former news director, Hannah Colton. I'm Megan Kamrick. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.